some people say we're afraid of failure, and that's close, but actually we're not afraid of failure. We're afraid of being seen being a failure. Mm-hmm. We're afraid of what other people are gonna say, right? Especially entrepreneurs, because most of our families don't get it. Most of our friends that we grew up with don't get it. The only people that get it are the relationships we made after becoming an entrepreneur.
Other people who are trying to do it too.
Exactly. Yeah. And so we're afraid of looking bad. We're afraid of looking bad. We're afraid of getting laughed at.
Hey everybody, Tamara here. I am super excited for today. I think you are going to be as well. My guest, Roy Redd, is absolutely amazing. We have a lot to dig into. So let me get to my favorite resource and share that with you so that we can get to Roy as well. As all of you know, one of my favorite resources is something called Focus at Will. And here's why. It is music scientifically proven to increase your productivity, your focus, your innovation, basically get you into a state of flow. And I'm gonna tell you right now, I've been paying for, it's a subscription, I've been paying for years, got more than I can, probably 5 or 6 years now. And I know for a fact that every time I put it on in the background, when I'm trying to like dial it in and work on that presentation or get ready for something, or just I need a creative idea for my next email campaign, I swear like everything just comes together in a way that it doesn't, I don't have it on. And I've tried classical stations on iTunes and Pandora and all those others. I'm telling you, it doesn't do the same. So if you want to dial up your performance and get to a state of flow, I highly recommend going and checking out Focus at Will. I will put the link in the show notes. And speaking of great, let me get on to today's podcast guest. Now, I just want to back up for a second and tell you the reason I wanted to have Roy on the show, there were two reasons, two things that really intrigued me and kind of as I was following him. One is he has this whole thing about workability versus productivity. And I think that's going to blow your minds a little bit. And I think his story is going to blow your mind too. And it's going to give you some insight into what's really possible for you as well. So with that, Roy, welcome to the show. How about you fill in the gaps and introduce yourself to our audience?
First, I want to say thank you, Tamara, for having me. I love the show. I went back and was listening to old episodes. I love the flow. I just love the guest and what you're doing with Launch Street. A little bit about myself, 5-time best-selling author, internationally recognized speaker and business advisor, and also help people do what I do, speak, write books and things of that sort. And I speak all over the world, done 2 TED Talks, but it hasn't always been that way. In 2011, I was, you know, broke, embarrassed, homeless, and really going through some problems. And I had a moment, what we'll talk about later, where I decided to take full responsibility for my life. And I just realized that I had to switch things up. And that changed my life around. And since 2011, I've been building my brand, building myself, and building my purpose.
So you went from homeless to basically being a millionaire. But I want to back up. And I would love for you to take us through that mindset of, and what you just said, which is I decided to take full responsibility for my life. And the reason I want to dig into that is I think that regardless of whether you are homeless or stuck in a job you don't like, or not getting the results in your life that, you know, you want, whatever place you're in, accountability matters. And it is, to me, it is the first step in getting to the next place, whatever that place is for you. And it is amazing how easy it is to not take accountability. And I don't think it always shows up as I'm the victim, woe is me. I think it shows up in a lot of insidious little ways that we don't even realize we're doing. And in so not taking accountability and in so not being able to actually move forward. So will you just back up and talk a little bit about how you made that decision and how and what you changed because of that?
Well, I was in a spot. My 1987 Honda Civic broke down on the 10 freeway. Awesome. And I was inside the Diamond Lane, which if you're not from California, the Diamond Lane is just the carpool lane. And there was a median between me and the other side. So when it broke down, I had to push this car by myself for 2 miles. And somewhere in pushing that car for that 2 miles, I asked myself a simple question. I said, Roy, you're smart. You got skills. Why do you continue to self-sabotage yourself? Because we're our biggest enemies, right? And I started to tear up because I didn't like the answer to that question. And the answer was, is because I wasn't taking full responsibility. And it was weird because when I decided to take full responsibility in that moment, I was kind of going through my head of why wouldn't you take responsibility before? And then I got the answer. And the answer is, we look at responsibility as blame. So if I say you're responsible for something and you don't feel like you were responsible for it, it's because you think I'm blaming you for that outcome. And it's not that. What responsibility is responsibility is a stand you take on yourself where no matter what happens, even if you weren't causal in the circumstances whatsoever, you always have your hands on the steering wheel. You can always do something about it and you can always react, because when you're complaining and trying not to take responsibility, nothing's getting done. But when you take full responsibility, you go straight into action, and action is the only thing that's going to fix whatever situation we're going through.
So you just kind of blew my mind a little bit. So I have a few things to say and then a question on it. It made me kind of think about how oftentimes not taking responsibility shows up as excuses. So, and I used to be guilty of this. So I didn't do my 5 sales calls today because I'm tired. I'm not going to on my game. It'll show up in the phone call. Or, oh, I've got to get this other, I've got to check all my emails first. Like, that actually matters, right? So, but I would find excuses that weren't like, I'm the victim or I'm not responsible. I'd find excuses. Did you find that for you, that you were in that place too, or did that show up for you as well?
They were excuses, but I was calling them reasons because that feels better and it sounds a little better, right?
No, they were definitely my reasons.
And it's what I try to do, like even when I work with my athletes or anyone, is I try to get them from looking at the world from a psychological assessment to a word assessment based on their word. And what a psychological assessment is talking about something. My mentor calls it abouting about something. And excuses and reasons are talking about the action that you're supposed to do or that you're going to do or whatever. But when you live based on your word, you say, I'm going to do it, and you just do it. And then if you don't do it, you just didn't do it. And then you give your word that you're going to do it at another time, and you just keep moving in action, right? The thing is, when we set out to achieve something, it's my belief that it's already done. We just need time and space until we get there. And our job is to make that time as less and less as we possibly can. I think the secret to that and the key to manifesting everything is by getting away from psychological assessments and into action based on our word, integrity of word, as best we can. Instead of feeling guilty that I had a donut, it's over, now let's get back on it. We get caught in these cycles of excuses and reasons and justifications, and those make the time longer till we get what I call our lag measures or our results.
So you're pushing this car for 2 miles, which gives you a lot of time to think. Yeah. Right. And you've come to these realizations. What was that experience like after, when you decided to make the changes? Because I think a lot of people would say change is hard for them because whatever habits, excuses, reasons, right, whatever it is, those tracks in our brain are pretty ingrained.
Yes.
Right. And they become our beliefs, and it's hard to fight beliefs. So I want to understand, I guess, from your experience, how you actually then made the change. Because it's one thing to have the conversation with yourself, and it's another thing to actually do something about it.
Yeah. Well, actually, the actual experience of pushing that car and being embarrassed, literally the Channel 7 news chopper was over my head, with the camera on me saying, guy holding up the diamond lane, tears in my eyes. Yeah. Just to go down a scientific route, the high stress, high energy, we're either motivated by gain or by loss. And so that high stress, high energy put my brain in a elastic plastic state. So I was able to change in that moment. And just thank God that my language was in a place to where I'm going to take responsibility, because whatever language you use in those highly energy, high stressful situations is what's going to create new brain patterns. Hopefully they're positive, and hopefully they're stronger brain patterns than the ones we built from ages 1 to 7 years old, which everything's a big deal when you're 1 to 7 years old. And that's where our brain patterns and our beliefs are created, like you talked about. But having that high stress, high energy moment, telling myself, I'm going to change this. I'm going to take responsibility, because even though it hurt me that I messed my life up to that point, it also empowered me, because I realized, oh, well, if I messed up, I could change it. Right. I could change it. I can fix it. And I got the skills. I got everything. All I have to do is make, like one of my favorite people, Brendan, says, is make my common sense my actual common practice, and I can change everything.
So I want to dig into something you were just talking about, because I think it's really important for all of us in Launch Street to understand. So, you know, you said this kind of high stress, high energy moment created opportunity in your brain to create new tracks, like lay new tracks. And I think that oftentimes we avoid the hard work, or we avoid stress, right? Or conflict even. So we avoid those things. But what the science is showing, what you're really, I think, talking about, but also have shown us here, is that we actually need to find those moments of high stress or confusion or conflict or even embarrassment, or, you know, like high energy, high stress, I think is how you said it. Because that actually allows us, it makes it easier for us to get over that hurdle, not actually harder, right? Am I hearing that right?
Yes, it does, if we can just deal with the stress. So I actually gave a talk at the National Head Start Association, and the name of the talk was "Stress is Not the Culprit," because stress gets such a bad name that it causes sickness and all this. And that's actually totally not true. What we say about the stress, our perception on stress, is actually what is the deciding factor. And I can do a quick experiment, takes like 1 minute to kind of prove that.
Yeah.
Stress is an experience. And all experiences we have happen in the now moment. Your past experiences, when they happen in that now moment. Your future experiences, when they happen, they will happen in that now moment. And so really quick, if you're watching this live or if you're watching this later, just think to yourself for 2 seconds what you're experiencing. Is that the temperature? Is that your butt in a chair? Is that whatever that is? Just think to yourself for 2 seconds what you're experiencing. Okay, go. Okay, stop. That's enough data. Now, if you actually did the experiment, you would realize that you failed. Because when you went to tell yourself what you're experiencing, it wasn't what you're experiencing. It's what you were experiencing a moment ago.
Right. You have to kind of go into the past.
Exactly. That's what the mind does. It only deals with the past and the future. It doesn't deal with the now moment. And it's worse than that. You didn't even say what you're experiencing a moment ago, because a moment ago no longer exists as an experience.
So you're just
a memory of experience.
You're basically making it up.
You're creating. You're creating your whole reality with your self-talk. As long and you can literally create your perceptions with your self-talk, as long as you have integrity of word.
So I just have to tell you what some of the stuff that's happening in the chat bar over here, because it's so funny on the experiment. They said, I thought I was experiencing uncomfort in my chair. Another one says, this is so interesting because it makes me realize how often I'm thinking about the past and not the present or the future. Any advice on how to get out of always thinking about what already happened? ? Yeah.
So
that's a great question.
They call it mindfulness. And what I say to all the mindfulness people is, what is the mind full of? What is it full of? And it's full of the past and the future. And so what happens is the past, we call that default language or past language. That's everything mom and dad or whoever raised you taught you, because you maybe had an experience and you made a face and they said, oh, look, she doesn't like grapes. And so you decided you didn't like grapes because your hippocampus, your doesn't even turn on until you're about a year, years old. And so all those suggestions is your past language. It's not even anything you created. And so the hard work is going back, and this is kind of what a really good therapist does, is going back and just realizing that you created what I call life sentences. A life sentence is a decision where you said life is this way because of this. And your brain made those to survive, because the brain, the mind cares about survival.
Right.
Go back, identify those. And when you identify them, you either can delete them just by identifying them, or at least bring the energy down on them to the point to where you can then create a created future for yourself.
So it's interesting. So I did Landmark one weekend, Landmark Forum. I don't know if you know Landmark yet. So I love it. They're not a sponsor. I'm not like, this is not a sales pitch, but I do think it's a really powerful program. But one of the things that kind of what you're saying reminds me of, as we talked about in there, is that, and I might be getting my analogies a little wrong, but basically there's what actually happened, which is like this big, if you see me, I'm like tiny little circle. And then there's the story that we create about what happened. And that's where we tend to focus. It's actually not the facts.
Yes.
It's the stories that we create. And kind of to your point, those stories are often in the past. And, you know, I think part of the challenge for a lot of us is how do we get the results that we're looking for without stressing about a past that did or didn't happen, and frankly is no longer relevant because it's gone. Yeah. And the worry and anxiety that we create on our own about the future that hasn't even happened yet. I mean, I am so guilty of that, Roy. I am notorious for worrying about the possibilities. And yeah. It's kind of funny, because if I don't worry about those things, they don't come true. If I worry about them, I feel like I make them come true sometimes. But it's this funny thing in our brains of like, we're stressing about the past and the future, two things are not with us anymore. One that isn't with us, and one that's not even, doesn't exist yet.
Yeah. So the brain is kind of like our elbow. It's just a tool. You know, it's not who we are. So I like to get people to disassociate, because a lot of times they say they experience maybe a feeling in their stomach or in their chest, and then they say, I have anxiety, and they attach that experience to their identity. No, more truthful is you maybe might be experiencing maybe butterflies or some sensations in your body. And the words that we were taught that fit those experiences are depression or anxiety or whatever words that actually fit. Those words, and people hate when I say this, aren't real. None of those things are real. What's real is the experience. And then we tied a word to those experiences. And so if we can be with those experiences, and so when I get anxiety, I don't say I have anxiety. I say, I'm experiencing some, and as soon as I go to tell myself what I'm experiencing, it goes away. And I root myself in the now moment by experiencing the now moment, by not putting any concepts on it. And when I'm experiencing it, that's the quickest way to get into the state of flow. And then I just get right back to action and saying, okay, I have this due today. I have this to do today. And I just go to work so I can get the results I want.
So one of the things that I found over my very long career is that action begets action. And yeah. I think like it's the first two steps that matter the most. In fact, I just did a podcast about creating an action plan, but my whole point in it is, before you even create the plan, I can't remember what step it is now, 3 or 4, it was a past podcast. Before you create the plan, like you sit down and create your whole whatever it is, actually take 3 immediate actions before you even create the plan. Cause I think what I find is that people get stuck in that, once they can build the plan, cause that's all theory, right? That's a piece of paper. And then the action, they're still paralyzed when it comes to the action. How do you advise people, or how do you yourself make sure that you're taking action and not getting paralyzed or finding those reasons, excuses not to do it?
Yeah. So I do have them planned, but I have them planned 60 to 80%. Mm. And is it 60 or 80%? Put it out. Because what happens is we get caught up in the perfectionism and wanting it to be, that's all just fear and reasons not to put it out. Once you're 60 to 80% done or have that concept or that idea, put it out, because you can't even make it perfect until you get feedback from the marketplace or whatever feedback from where you got to get it anyway. Then you can start to fix things. My good friend, two of my good friends, Brandon Stokes and Andre Woodley, they're both built really huge tech companies. And one of them just built another one that's doing like 90 grand a month. He's killing it. But they're part of Y Combinator, which is like the biggest mentorship in tech. And one of the sayings that they always say is, if it doesn't look like crap, you didn't put it out fast enough. You're taking too long to get proof of concept. And so that is a thinking that I kind of stole from them, is they want to put it out to see if it works. Because if it doesn't work, you're going to waste your time. And then now your baby isn't even making you any results, right? So they put it out, see if it works. Then when it works, they start to go on working on making it, quote unquote, better.
I think that's so true. I think the founder of LinkedIn said something similar too, that was like, if you're not embarrassed by your first iteration, you waited too long. It's something like, I'm probably botching it, but something like that. Why do you think action is so hard for people to take? I kind of want to dig in there a little bit, because, you know, there was a time in my life where I think if I'd been listening to this, I would have probably had heart palpitations at the idea of like, go, go, go. And now I'm all about massive action. Like, sometimes you got to slow me down because I'm always in motion. Yeah. So like, I get it now, but there was a time where action felt, it felt hard. I wanted, honestly, Roy, I wanted to avoid it. And I think we do that sometimes it's conscious, sometimes it's subconscious. So why, from your experience and the people you work with, your clients, what is that hurdle they have to get over?
So some people say we're afraid of failure, and that's close, but actually we're not afraid of failure. We're afraid of being seen being a failure. We're afraid of what other people are going to say, right? Especially entrepreneurs, because most of our families don't get it. Most of our friends that we grew up with don't get it. The only people that get it are the relationships we made after becoming an entrepreneur.
Other people who are trying to do it too. Like,
exactly. Yeah. And so we're afraid of looking bad. We're afraid of looking bad. We're afraid of getting laughed at. And I just, being that I played a sport, I'm very competitive. So when I get, I'm okay with being laughed at, because I know I'm gonna put the work in over time. I'm gonna do the daily mundane stuff that makes me good. And then I'll laugh at you later. But
success is the best laughter, right? Isn't that what they say?
Yes. But the initial, we don't give each other space to be bad initially. We only give that to kids. You know, if a little girl says she's gonna be a gymnast and she can't even flip, we don't say, can't even flip, you're terrible. No, we clap them up. We give them that agreement. We hate disagreement. And so that's why we don't put things out.
So I just want to stop there for a second, because I think it's really powerful what you're saying, Roy, about, I hadn't really thought of it that way. I agree with you. I don't think we're afraid of failure. I think oftentimes too, by the way, I think we're afraid of success, because that's change. Yeah. Failures actually can be really comfortable for a lot of people. I know I played in that space early on in my career. It was easier, not early in the middle part of my career, but that whole, like, we're going to be seen as failures. And that what happened? Where along the way did we go from rewarding, applauding, being like, good for you for trying those somersaults, to like, oh, did you see Roy? That bomb. Like, what, why is that the case?
We became adults.
Damn adults. It's no fun.
For some reason, I don't know why, the mind is just negative unless we prime it for gratitude and prime it for positivity. You know, it just, it's my thought and assumption that it's because if Roy is successful, then now I got to look at myself and all those things that I really wanted to do that I didn't do. I have no more excuses not to do them, because Roy's from where I'm from, he's doing it. And so I have to do what I can to stop him from doing that so that I don't have to do it. And I think really it's just a reflection of how they see themselves deep down.
Yeah.
And they just haven't done the work to fix that.
I think I talk about this in my book. It's like death by 10,000 cuts.
Yeah.
You know, so people, it's not always obvious, but you know, you'll get things like, Roy, slow it down, dude. Like, why are you working so hard? Oh my God, why don't you enjoy yourself and come out with us Friday night? Why would you bother doing that? Like, and to your point, it's a reflection of them. So here's a question in from the live audience that relates to this. I'd love to hear your response to this too. She asks, so I don't work in the most supportive environment, but after hearing this message, your message, mm-hmm. I'm realizing I need to take accountability and stop blaming a lack of a supportive culture for not going after the big goals. Yeah. How do I insulate myself or toughen myself up so that I'm less concerned about being perceived as a failure and more willing to put myself out there regardless of what happens? Well, you know what? I just want, before you answer, I just have to say, thank you for asking that. That's a great question, because so many of us are in work cultures, family cultures that don't support us. But to your point about kind of extreme ownership of our own lives, we can't let that be an excuse.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's create an identity. So first, take that goal, take that purpose, whatever that thing is you want to do. Let's write that down. I'm sure you have it written down somewhere. Now, who is the type of person that achieves that? And I do this with my athletes, and I want you to give that person a name. So my main big purpose and goal is to inspire and instruct 1 billion people to live better lives or improve their business. And so the name I've given that person, the identity I created, is Motivational Billy, like Motivational Billionaire, right? And so I want you to take that identity, figure out who is the type of person who would do that, and give that identity a name, like an alter ego. I can't say this athlete's name. Huge athlete, everybody would know him, NBA player. We created an identity for him. And the moment he created that identity, he started playing like he could, up to his potential. Because a lot of times we feel a way because someone said, Roy, you're this, or Roy, you're that. So by creating an identity, I can step into something and embody something
like different. Like a costume or a shield.
Yes, yes. It's a totem. They call it a totem. And so whatever that is, and then what I want you to do is cut out the distractions from that point. Anything that identity would focus on, I want you to focus on that. And I want you to also add that focus to your phone. So anybody who doesn't fit that focus, anything that doesn't fit that focus or that identity, it can't notify you or can't get a hold of you on this phone. And anything that fits it can get through. And I want you to create literally your own world and tunnel vision for that identity.
I love it. And here's what I find fascinating about this is, you know, we talk a lot about disassociating ourselves from our negative voice. So like mine has a name, I call him Bernard, and he and I have long conversations, but if Bernard is doing it, it's not me, right? With the negative chatter, it's Bernard. And I can quiet Bernard. I can put Bernard in the passenger seat, right? I can just ask Bernard why he's getting so riled up. Yeah. Because it's not me. When it was me, it was much harder to manage. And what I hear you saying is do that on the success side too, the positive side too, is create this identity. I absolutely love that. I think it gives us also more freedom to, put ourselves out there and take those risks. And I think it allows us to deal with the failure. And I think too that failure is a funny word, because I don't think we should avoid it necessarily, but I also think that if things don't work, they don't work. That's it. And it doesn't have to, it's only a failure because we have so much baggage around that word, you know, like it's just such a negative word in our culture. And I don't know that it needs to be.
And it's not even real.
You know? Yeah. Well, it just didn't work the way you wanted it to. That's all. It's kind of.
And now that you, and I love that word, because now that it doesn't work, what can you do?
Fix it. Yeah. Yeah. So I want to, I don't know about switch gears a little bit, but I want to talk about your concept of workability, because that really intrigued me. So you were talking about how to dial up your workability, but not your productivity. So first, will you define both of those for us?
So productivity is just getting a bunch of stuff done, getting our task lists done, being productive, right? Whatever we said we were going to do, we actually did it. Workability is doing what works to get the result or the goal. So if I think about a hammer's job is to put nails into wood. So the workability of that hammer is how good it can put nails into wood, right? The productivity of that hammer is just the hammer hacking away at a nail, right? But it can it do its job? So what is your job? What is your result that you're chasing after? What is the workability of a person? And it's funny, I was talking to my dad, and this is where the concept really hit me. And I was asking him about an exercise, and he was just like, I mean, if it works, if it doesn't, it doesn't. And that small quote changed my life and changed my whole thinking, because now, like, look at diets, look at everything that we argue that we think is the right way. We're all different, right? And so when you can look at something, do it. And if it works, keep doing it. And if it doesn't work, stop doing it. And so that gets us on the right track and shortens that time that it takes to manifest what we're trying to manifest.
Okay, so let's break it down and get super tactical.
Yeah.
How I love that concept. And I think, you know, in this culture in particular, we reward busyness, and busyness doesn't equal results.
Yeah.
And in fact, all it does is equal most of the time is exhaustion of some kind. So if I'm out there listening and I got goals, right? We've all got goals in some way, whether I'm an entrepreneur or I'm a leader inside a company. Yep. How do I figure out what is really in the productivity pile of, like, I'm just checking it off, and what is in the workability pile? Like, how do I figure this out?
Okay, perfect. So workability would be the 20% that gets you 80% of the results. Mm. So let me give an example. I have a course where I help speakers make minimum 60 grand in their bottom line in a year or more. And someone asked me, they said, how can you guarantee that? Like it almost seems fake that your product seems fake, because how can you guarantee that? And I go, oh, easy. I know what works. You know, if you look at the wisdom pyramid, its data is at the bottom, and we all want the data, right? That's at the bottom. At the top is wisdom, and wisdom is saying, hey, do this and it'll work. And so what works is this. You have to know what your lead measures are and your lag measures are. Lag measures are the result that you're looking for. And lead measures are the daily mundane things you do to get the lag measures. And the reason why the results are called lag measures is because there's a delay before they happen, okay? So lead measures for losing weight is taking in less calories than you burn, right? You know, if you do that over a month or two, then you'll lose weight. Now, my lead measures for every 150 speaking gig I reach out to, I get one. And so if I want to speak 40 times a year, and that's going to make me that 60 grand, then I know I just need to, math plus marketing equals money. So I know exactly what I need to do. And so the subconscious mind needs a target. And so I can, now I have a target, and that's outreach. That's my lead measure. That's my email. And so whatever it is you're chasing, figure out what those lead measures are. Usually you know what they are, and you just got to do them every single day. And if you don't know what they are, ask someone who has the results that you want and ask them what their lead measures are, what daily things they do exactly to get the results they have.
So a while back, I did this exercise where I looked at my most profitable, highest revenue 3 months.
Yeah.
And I worked backwards and said, okay, what led each win? Every single tiny little win, like the $47 wins or the $150,000 wins, like all of them, I looked at and said, what actually got me that win? Mm-hmm. And I have to tell you, Roy, it was eye-opening. I was focusing, because to your point, it lags. I was actually focusing on all the wrong things moving forward, because I lost sight of what actually the starting points, what actually got me there. So I think that doing this exercise that you're talking about and actually assessing what really got me the win, not what I think, not what I'd like it to be, But what really got me the win, and that win could be a yes from your boss or money in the door. And by the way, math plus marketing equals money might be my favorite quote ever. I don't know if you made that up or you got that somewhere, but I freaking love it.
But yeah, my mentor, Ed Rush, actually came up with that. And when you, so like you said, you looked at your best 3 months.
Yeah.
A lot of times I'll get on the phone, like I have a call in about 45 minutes with a business owner. And I just want to look for where the money is in their business. And I'll ask a simple question, like, I'll just say, what did you do last that made you the most money? And then go, oh, we ran this promotion and we did this, this, and this. And I'll go, okay, first thing we're going to do is do that again. And then they'll do it and we'll meet in a month and they'll go, oh my God, it worked. I made so much money. What do I do next? And I go, let's run that promotion again. And so, especially being entrepreneurs, we're ADD, where there's 100 things we're doing and 100 things that we regret that we're not doing. Yes. And we don't know what's really working. And so we want to do so much. We want to do a podcast. We want to write a book. We want to do everything because that's why we have anxiety. We want to get all our ideas out of us and bring them to the world. But knowing exactly what to focus on that brings the actual results that we want is what workability is.
Yeah, so it's interesting you share that story because I just had a conversation yesterday with he's now a client. I'm going to help him build some stuff in his business and make his, like, he's got a very, like me in innovation, a very kind of subjective space. I'm going to help him make him really tangible and create a product out of it, the short, without giving kind of anything confidential away. But I asked him, so what are you doing to generate revenue? Like, what are you doing? And he gave me about 50 things. And I just was like, whoa, wait a minute, like, back up. Why are you doing those things? And he's like, well, we don't know. I said, okay, well, you've made a little bit of money, not the money you need to make or want to make, but what led to that little bit of money? Like, let's kind of, to your point, like, let's back it up for a second. But we're so used to being productive. And the other thing, and I want to ask your perspective on this, is I think we tend to decide what we think we should do to meet our personal individual goals.
Yeah.
Whether, again, that's a revenue for your own company as an entrepreneur or your goal inside an organization or in life.
Yeah.
We base them on what other people in our field are doing. And right. So, like, I look online and I'm like, my God, I should be spending millions of dollars on Facebook ads and LinkedIn ads. And yeah. Oh, I need to do a live video every day. And like, cause obviously that's what everybody else in my field is doing.
Yeah.
But we don't know that it's working for them. And that doesn't, all we're doing is adding to the noise anyway. So do you find that too, that like we're trying to base what we should do on what other people are doing?
That's so true, because we don't want to be left out. We don't want to be left out. And so it can work both ways. Like one of my mentors, Ken, when I was telling him the lead generation I was getting a long time ago when Clubhouse first started, he didn't believe me. He was like, oh, you're focusing on too much. You're doing too much. You need to, I was like, Ken, you don't understand. You hop in these rooms and talk for 2 minutes and then people come follow you on Instagram. And then I get them on a call and then I'm closing them on calls. And the conversion rates were just really high on Clubhouse in the beginning. It's not anymore. But usually he's right. We want to be doing everything. For example, social media. I love social media. People are emailing me all the time, like, hey, can I help you with your social media marketing? And
all
I
want to
tell them, social media is not where my customers are going to hire me at. Nobody's going to pay me. Nobody's going to see my social media and then pay me $10,000 to be their business advisor based on what they saw on my social media. It's just not going to happen. And so you have market, your message, and then media. And so we know our market. We know our message usually. That goes well with our market. But where are they is what people get wrong. And that's usually where we have to pivot. Anyway, my market's on LinkedIn or I have to email. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so, Instagram works for some stuff, but I don't even know what TikTok works for at all. I know Gary Vee says you need to be on TikTok.
It works for recipes. I like to find recipes on TikTok and I like to learn new dances. I'm not gonna lie. I do try to learn all of the challenges. I'm not very good at them, but I try. You know, it's interesting that you say, so my market's also basically on LinkedIn, a little bit of Facebook. And I find that social media in a lot of cases is a great validator for people who were referred to you and they're like, let me check her out and make sure she's legit, right? So she's got something to say. But I'm with you on that. But I think it goes back to the kind of just a little bit of FOMO, a little bit of, well, I don't know what to do, so I'm going to do what everybody else is doing. And I think, as I say to all the time, different beats better any day of the week. And better isn't like I'm going to have a smoother stream on LinkedIn Live or, you know, whatever. So I think that's really good advice. I want to talk a little bit about your book before we run out of time. Let me make sure I get it right. The Unnoticed Advantage and the Success Magnet. Cultivate the five values that attract success. Is that right? Is that the newest one? Okay, I've got a list here, so I want to make sure I got it right. Talk a little bit about that and those five values.
So those values are money, love and connection, importance, chasing something that's important to you, giving, and anything that is a need that you think is a need to you. Mm-hmm. And so what I found is when we think we have a need, we are going to find a way to get that need, whether it's in a quote unquote good way or in a bad way. I just want it to be in the positive and in a good way. And so what those five values are is saying, hey, based on your self-expression, because I think that's what true success is building your life based on your self-expression, not what anyone else has told you, not your mom, not your dad, but me, oh Lord, here standing with you in prayer. I think that self-expression, bringing it to your business, bringing it to your workplace, bringing it to your relationships, and bringing it to your personal development is key in being your best and being the best, because nobody else could be you. It's the number, it's such a good category of one. It's a unique selling proposition that nobody else can beat because you're different and nobody else could be you.
So I love that. And so we have a proprietary research-based assessment that tells you your unique mm-hmm. style of innovation, like what your everyday innovator style, mm-hmm. what yours is to you. Yeah. And part of the reason I love it, and I think the clients really resonate or people resonate with it, is it shows you what's unique about you and what you can, like almost like a pedestal to stand on. I don't mean that in the boisterous way. I just mean that in a more of a foundational way of, hey, this is who I am and this is part of what I can bring to the world. And I think we often lose sight of that. And we get sucked into groupthink. We get sucked into, well, how's everybody else? You know, you mentioned Gary Vee, just for interject for a second. I'll just say, like, I look at him and then I go, well, I gotta, like, people go, well, I gotta be like harsh and in your face like him, but that's not me. So like it works for him. And I've tried to be like other people and it never works for me, it turns out. So finally I just gave up doing that.
I found that there's nothing that I can say about myself that's absolute. Mm. Sometimes I'm aggressive, sometimes I'm empathetic, sometimes it just depends on the moment and what result I'm trying to chase. And like how you said earlier, you have Bernard, I have Roy, I have Roy, I have
Roy.
I have so many different personalities that bring out different moments that helps me disassociate. But yeah, it's so true what you're speaking of.
I want to ask, excuse me, this might sound like a little bit of a tangent, but I want to ask you this question because I just had this conversation the other day about the different size, right? Yeah. So I have Tamara. And I do CrossFit. And when that buzzer, so in CrossFit, there's always like a countdown and then it goes beep, right? The buzzer goes off and then it's like go time. And I get super competitive when that buzzer goes off. And it doesn't matter whether I'm competing against people 20 years younger than me, games athletes, and I'm an average CrossFitter at best, okay? Yeah. Just to be clear, like I'm not some amazing expert, but the minute that buzzer goes off, I am in it to win and I will do what it takes to go as far as I can possibly go. Sometimes I win, sometimes like win in terms of like I had the best time. And it's not that, just to be clear, because people are probably like, Tamara's mean. Yeah. I want you to do your best too, but then I want to beat you on the plane. Yeah. That's what it is. So. Yeah.
Competition gets such a bad rap.
I love
competition. Like Neo needed Agent Smith to make him Neo. Like you need that opposition to make you your best self. I was reading I forget what book it was. I think it was Performance, but they were talking about how people who are the best in the world use more of their brains than other people. And that's because they're so competitive that they force themselves to use more of their brain to win the situation. And so I started to think, I said, well, what if everyone started to be that competitive? Now we'll start using more and more of our brain because the opposition is going to push us to higher and higher levels.
No, I love competition. And again, it's not, I'm not a cheater. I'm not like, I don't want you to go down. I want me to go up. That's kind of what it, for me, what it boils down to. Here's my, I totally agree with what you say. I think competition is really good. And again, that's something we shy away from.
Yes.
Here's my question for you. This was the experience I had recently. I was in a bit of a motivational lull. And but I realized when I go to the gym in the morning, I am not. I'm like, right? Every time I go to the gym, no matter how tired I am, I'm like, I'm going for it.
Yeah.
Yet in other parts of my life, I was feeling like I wasn't doing that. And I had a little, I had to have a little talk with myself about how do I leverage Tamara, right? Who's like, oh, when my buzzer goes off, into my business so that I can dial it up and really get to the next level that I want to get to. And so I kind of had to borrow from that Tamara for this Tamara. Yeah. So like, do you borrow from Roy? Like, are there times where you realize I need a little more of this Roy or a little more of that Roy? And how do you do that?
You know, so I actually have the same issue and it's exactly the same. So I like to get my workout done and no matter how I feel, that workout is getting done and at a high level.
Yeah.
But then sometimes I'm like, like today I got a list from one of my employees or leads that we have to write first lines for emails. And I'm like, I'm going through the companies, learning about the companies, writing first lines. I'm like, and I was like, I can't wait to my 10 a.m. podcast on Line Street. It's only seven. You know, and it's, I was trying to bring that. And so I put on some music, I drank some coffee. And just at the end of the day, sometimes we have to focus on the end goal.
Yeah.
And so then I said,
pull out what we need.
When I send these emails, I'm going to get at least five or six talks. And the talking is what I love to do. The speeches is what I love to do. And so I can't wait to be on the stage. And so as I'm looking at the company, I'm looking at it. One is in Dubai. I'm like, well, I'd love to fly to Dubai. And I'm just finding things to create that future. Oh, I can't wait to fly to Dubai and do my thing out there. Maybe I could stay a couple extra days and look at the city, you know? And so just trying to find those things in the end result that can motivate me.
Isn't it interesting how we segment? And like, if you know, to your point about workability, it's kind of workability in your own, how you tackle things too, not just your tasks. Because I know what works for me is when that buzzer goes off. So like for me, that's really motivating. And the competition is really motivating. So I just needed to leverage that over here, you know?
And having those tests too, like I use the Colby index test. And I'm sure I'm just talking to you. I think we really have the same Colby, which is like an innovation, quick start. But the way I deal with uncertainty is with certainty. And so in Colby, it says that I really have to use deadlines and I have to go into situations not prepared. It actually says that because that is what brings me to action is kind of last minute, not prepared. Let's get it done. Let's figure it out. I kind of need stress to work, but that's just me.
Well, but to your point, like figure out what works for you and keep doing that. All right. So before my final question, because I can't believe we're out of time. Where can people go to connect with you, get your books, all that good stuff?
So I would love for you to connect with me on Instagram. That's Roy, R-O-Y underscore red, R-E-D-D. If you go to my website, royred.com, R-O-Y-R-E-D-D.com, there is a book there that you guys will love. It's called The Unbounded CEO. Mm-hmm. It's the ultimate productivity tool that will help you make more money, have a bigger impact, and in less time and with less waste. Grab that, reach out to me, DM me. You can email me at roy@royred.com. I respond. we can get on the phone, whatever you need, let me know. I'm here to help.
Awesome. We'll put all those links in the show notes. Final piece of advice for all of us on Launch Street, trying to kind of get to that next place with less waste. I love that. So what's your advice there?
Just do the work. Just do the work. Every day I start out in a state of, for lack of better terms, depression. I wake up and I'm like, oh, I'm tired. But then I generate gratitude. I wake up, is literally the first thing I think. And then I go, God, thank you for another one. Yeah. Thank you for another one. As soon as I say that, I get a little bit of some feel good. And then I pray. Then I get up. Then I prime myself for gratitude. It's called priming if you YouTube it. Mm-hmm. And then I just get to work. And it's something weird about generating feelings. The power plant doesn't have energy. It generates energy. We don't have all that stuff. We generate it every day. I don't feel like doing it, but the moment I sit down to do it, then I feel great. And I'm just like, I'm so happy I did this. But when you get caught up in the procrastination and you don't force those initial actions and you don't do it, that's when you get in that bad feedback loop. So just do the work. And I promise you that there'll be some feel good on the other side.
So I feel like that is awesome and very practical advice to end on. So Roy, thank you for being here. Thanks for a great interview.
Thank you so much for having me.